Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm Brian Tetta, executive producer of The View. It's Tuesday, and I'm joined by Sonny Hostin. This is Behind the Table. All right, it is Tuesday, and I'm here with Sonny. Hello, Sonny.
Hi, Brian.
Let us start with the big news of the day, which is really the big news of the month and everything else, the Trump hush money trial. Today, Stormy Daniels finally took the stand.
Yes.
We're about to get a first-hand account of what's happening in the courtroom because you just got press access. I'm so excited. You weren't there today, but you're going to get a chance to go in there. Why is it important for you to be there?
You know, I started kind of in this business as a courtroom reporter. That's what I did. I did it for Court TV. I did it for CNN. I had press credentials. And most people remember my reporting from the Trayvon Martin case, right? And that's sort of when I found my deep passion for this. I knew that I was in the right place. And I don't think anyone can report from a courtroom better than someone that has tried criminal cases.
Right.
I really truly believe that. There's an art to litigation. There's an art to being a prosecutor. There's an art to being a defense attorney.
You're going to see things a layman wouldn't see.
Definitely. Right. Definitely. And I'm going to have relationships with people that, you know, I think sometimes court reporters respond, stenographers respond to me differently. Prosecutors respond to me differently. Personnel, courtroom personnel, they know when you know your way around the courtroom. So this is my Super Bowl, guys, okay? I'm really excited about
it. And now you've got sideline passes.
And now I've got my sideline passes. So I intend to be there as much as possible after the show every single day.
This is exciting. And I have to give you credit because this came from you. This
it
was
did.
Your idea.
I was like, Brian, put me in, coach.
And I was as soon as you said it, I was both excited and mad at myself for not thinking of it because why wouldn't we do this? It's fantastic.
It's going to be fun.
And we'll be able to report every day on when there's something to report, obviously.
Exactly.
So I'm excited about that. Now, your opinion on the trial has been a little bit different than everybody else at the table because you have more faith that people care about it than some of the others do. Tell me why you think that.
Well, I've been in front of, you know, probably over 100 juries. I know how seriously jurors take these cases. And I know that in the end, people want what is just and right and fair. And if you look at the polls or the studies, 71% of Americans agree that if he is convicted, he should go to jail. That's about punishment. It's not about retribution, and it's about accountability. And so I think this case is more important than people are saying that it is, because you have some people saying, it's just sex with a porn star. Well, it's more than that, isn't it, right? It's sex with a porn star while your wife just had a child, and you then pay her off not to tell the public about your dalliances so that you can win an election. That's pretty serious. You're lying to people.
Any other candidate any other time in history, it would have been absolutely disqualifying.
Absolutely. And I think it is disqualifying. And I think even though there are no cameras in the courtroom, unfortunately, I think reporters are doing a pretty good job of getting out there what is needed to get out. And if you look at it today, I mean, there are all these fires all around the world. Guess what? Everyone's talking about Stormy Daniels on the stand. That's how important this case is.
All right. And this is very exciting for me because I get to give a legal note to Sonny Hostin.
Yes, you do.
This is very rarefied air here for me.
You know, you have to do it a certain way, you know.
A deadpan. Okay. I don't necessarily agree with the way you do it every day. Or the follow-up from the other host when they do it. But
so
all right.
To be very serious.
I have a legal note. Trump has pleaded not guilty to falsifying business records and has denied ever having an affair with Stormy Daniels. Well, speaking of Trump, you've had some pointed words towards Senator Tim Scott.
Yes.
Not for the first time, but specifically now.
To be fair, I said it to his face because we've had him on the show.
We did indeed. This time, specifically, for not committing to accepting the results of the 2024 election. This is over the weekend. He gave an interview where they kept asking him over and over again, mm-hmm. and he refused to answer it.
Yeah.
You said, and I'm quoting you, he's groveling for that vice president position to a man who is morally bankrupt with no moral compass.
Is that what I said?
Sounds like you.
Yeah, it sounds like me. No, I mean that. I think that when you are a United States senator, you take an oath to the Constitution. You take an oath to uphold the Constitution. And part of our, you know, the American fabric is the peaceful transfer of power. Now, if you are if you want to be the vice president of the United States, which is embodied in the Constitution of this country, and you can't say that you would be willing to go along with the peaceful transfer of power, having already seen an insurrection,
right?
I think that that disqualifies you, quite frankly, for public office, not just for the office of the vice president. I think for public office altogether. So I think he got off pretty lightly with me.
Yeah.
All I said was that, you know, he was groveling. I didn't say that he should be disqualified for it, but that's what I think.
All right, so you're going a little further now, but that's okay. That's okay. Yeah, no, I think you've never been shy about your opinion of Senator Scott, and nor has he been shy in firing back.
No, he doesn't like me.
No, no one's ever lost a vote on the Republican side by coming for the view, so they like to do that. All right, well, we had this amazing Teacher Appreciation Day surprise. Let's turn to something a little more fun.
Yeah.
With Tiffany Haddish this morning. Now, I know your mother was a teacher for many years, mine too.
Yes, yes. Over 40 years, my mom.
Yeah, my mother, my grandmother, my grandfather, my uncle. I come from a family of teachers. Do you have any teachers that were pivotal to your success that come to mind?
Yes, I have so many, but I will start out with the woman who really, I think, set my trajectory. Her name was Miss Lopez. You know, nowadays you call teachers by their first name in some schools. I didn't do that.
Me
so
either.
I don't know what her first name is. It was Miss Lopez in the third grade at St. Anselm School in the Bronx. And I was the kid that was bored in class and talked a lot, as you can imagine, and would try to get bathroom passes and then just kind of hang out in the hallways and talk to people.
It's like I'm looking in a mirror. This is very, very familiar to me.
I did that, and I did it in first grade, and I did it in second grade. I kind of got pushed forward, so I didn't attend like kindergarten the whole time, and because they knew that I was either very smart or just trouble, and it could have just turned into, you know, trouble and someone, a kid who's really mischievous and ignored. But this one teacher, I would always raise my hand and I would sit in the front of the class and I would raise my hand and raise my hand. And for years, the teachers didn't pick on me. You know, they picked other kid students. And she finally asked me after one class, she said, "Are you raising your hand just so that you can talk a lot, which is your reputation? Or is it because you know all the answers?"
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "I know all the answers."
Right.
I was very confident. I know all the answers. And she said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, I do. But no one ever calls on me." So she started giving me these little booklets to fill out, little circles. And I spent my time doing that instead of interrupting my classmates. And as it turns out, after a couple of months, she called my parents in for a conference. And she said, "I've had her taking standardized exams. And she's passed the 12th grade. So this school is no longer good for her.
Mm-hmm.
She shouldn't go to fourth grade. She should go to fifth grade. And she should find a new school. And I'm going to help your family find a new school that you can afford," because we were very poor. And thinking in retrospect, had I not switched schools, I went to a school in Manhattan that she found an incredible school with, you know, AP classes and that kind of thing, more advanced classes, I don't think I'd be sitting here today. I think I would be this mischievous troublemaker who started skipping classes because I felt like I already knew everything.
Now, this is interesting because we've glossed over it before, but you've mentioned it a couple of times. You went to college very young. How
16.
Old were you? 16 years old.
Yes.
What was that like?
I was a crazy person.
Yeah.
I think about it now that I have an 18-year-old and a 21-year-old.
Right.
And my son actually graduated, was supposed to start college at 17. And thank God we all agreed that he would take a gap year, because that's
right.
Very young. And 16 was probably too young. 12 was probably too young for high school, too. But I would have been bored otherwise, I do think.
Socially, though, it must have been hard.
I mean, very socially awkward, and I couldn't do any of the things that everyone else did. And,
right.
And now that's why I feel so young, because I didn't experience some of the things that other kids did. Like, you know, I wasn't drinking in college. I was barely legal. I was barely an adult. So it was, I think, you know, the notion of skipping grades now is just, I don't think it's a good idea. I think now they have enrichment courses. They have, you know, advanced courses and kids, courses for gifted students. And I think that's a much better option than just putting, you know, an 8-year-old into a 5th grade classroom.
Right.
That's tough.
No, I think so. I mean, even being on the young side of a birthday now, people get nervous and they think about holding people back.
It's difficult.
And things like that.
It's difficult socially. You learn very quickly, though, who you are.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. I mean, you're, you know, I jumped right to college, but you're right. 12 years old in high school is no picnic, I would think.
No.
That's got to be.
No. It's hard finding a prom date, man.
I would think. Illegal finding a prom date, maybe. It's
exactly.
Yeah, that's tricky. That's tricky.
I went with my cousin's friend.
Yeah, all right, well,
there you go. My cousin's friend, Louie.
We talked about the prom today. Tell me about your prom.
You know, my prom was pretty good. I was pretty young, so I went with my cousin's friend, Louie. And we didn't know each other that well, but it's the only person that, like, I could take other than my cousin, Jeffrey. And they were on the track team together, and I was an athlete too, so it worked out. And I couldn't go to any after parties because I was too young, and my father wouldn't allow it. And my father allowed a limo. One of his friends owned a limo, so we had a limo that drove us to the place and then drove us home immediately. And then that was my prom.
Okay. Well,
but I mean, you know.
As a father, I respect
that. I had a good time, but. It was certainly, you know, my daughter's going to have her first prom this month.
Oh, wow.
She's picking out a dress and she's getting her glam done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she has an after party that the school is planning. It seems very different.
Yeah, it's more contained, kind of.
It just seems like she's going to have a much better time than I had.
My prom was not great.
Oh, no.
The girl I was going to go with, we had a falling out a little bit beforehand, so then I had to scramble and get another date. I went with a friend of a friend, and she ditched me on the cruise around New York Harbor on the way out of the thing for another guy.
Yeah, Brian,
so
that's
rough.
A tragedy.
That was rough. And we had went to the Jersey Shore for the night, and I was like on someone's couch. It was not good.
Oh, that's not good.
I will
say one funny thing is we were all kids that didn't come from a lot. We didn't have a lot of money, and there were these bowls that there were shrimp, and then there were these, it was a fancy prom, and there were these bowls.
I was gonna say, I didn't have shrimp at my prom.
Yeah, I had shrimp, and there were these bowls that they put out in front of us, and they were like kind of sudsy with lemon, and I'm looking at everyone, and we're all looking at each other. We're like basically kids from the South Bronx, and some from like the Lower East Side of Manhattan, and I said to Louie, what do you think that is? And he says, we should drink it. It's to wash our mouth out because we just had fish. I was like, okay, great. And we all drink it, the entire table. They're finger bowls, people. You're actually supposed to dip your hands and fingers and wash them because you just had like peel and eat shrimp. And so you're washing them.
Oh, but my God.
I drank them along with everybody at my table.
That's one of my prom memories. That's like a scene from like an alien movie when they come and don't know what to do at the table.
That was one of my prom memories.
That's hysterical.
Thank you.
I like that very, very much. That makes me feel better about my prom.
Thanks, Louie.
Well, go Louie. Louie, I wonder what Louie's doing now.
I don't know.
Okay, we'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Welcome to the Snapple Market Auditory Experience. Close your eyes. Imagine you're walking into your neighborhood store. You make your way to the back and reach for your favorite Snapple flavor. You can't wait. You take a sip. Whoa, that's a lot of flavor. Mm-hmm. What flavor are you holding? Now open your eyes and check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavorful Snapple near you.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Well, speaking of exciting things, we've talked about your book that's coming out soon. Whoopi's book comes out today.
Yes.
We had that great segment with her last week. I really enjoyed that, where she was really a guest.
She was really vulnerable.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. The book is more vulnerable than you think.
It was. You know, it was easy to read. I read it on my way to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I read it on the train. And what was, you know, I've worked with Whoopi for 8 years now. And so you kind of feel like you know everything about a person. And I do know that she's very family oriented and very generous. I remember when Manny's parents passed from COVID, she sent us meals every day for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And it was such a lifeline for us because we were pretty shell-shocked. And
of course,
really, he was in really deep grief. And the way to his heart is his stomach.
Sure.
So it was really helpful for us. And it was very soothing. And after reading the book, I realized that, you know, her mother wasn't there for her for 2 years, but her brother was. And I realized that that family bond, that connection is super, super, super important to her. And it's the little things. And, you know, she has often said to me, don't leave anything unsaid. And when she writes about it, now I kind of had this special insight into it. Because that's the worst thing, right? And you don't appreciate certain people when they're around because you think they're always going to be there. And that came across a lot in her book. And so I have a new appreciation for sort of what makes her tick. Because Whoopi's complicated.
She's complicated, and she's actually surprisingly private, really.
Yes,
for someone who's lived in front of cameras and her whole life, she keeps a lot protected.
She sure does.
And this is pretty raw.
Yeah, it was pretty vulnerable.
Yeah, I was really impressed by it. And I thought the segment was terrific.
Yeah.
And I recommend everybody go out and read it. All right, let's end on a happy note here.
Okay.
Because
yes.
Loma's 18th birthday was last weekend.
It was.
I heard you threw a big party, of course, because you do that. Tell
me
about
it. Party. You know, she didn't want to have a party because she doesn't like to be the center of attention. And I was like, but sweetie, it's your 18th birthday. She's like, maybe, you know, just the family will go out, which is what my kids and I were, you know, all of the Hostin crew were very close. And so for their birthdays, they usually just want to go to Benihana or Ito's. They like those steakhouses where the hibachi style. And this time, 3 weeks before her 18th birthday on May 4th, she says, I think I would like to have a party.
Mm.
Now I'm in party mode.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in party planning mode, Brian.
It's a big birthday.
And I was like, what's the color theme? And she said gold, which, I mean, that was right up my alley. So, yes, we had a step and repeat with like an 8-foot gold glitter wall that I found. We had like 500 gold balloons. We had big number 18s everywhere. We had 3 food trucks. I would definitely recommend the food truck route because the kids get to go outside and
a food truck.
Your kitchen is so clean after the party. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. One of her friends, her Jack and Jill friends, is a DJ, and he came and he DJed. It was so special. And my dad came for it, and her brother, of course, came for it. And so her former au pair came from Florida. Like, it was just so incredible, you know, to have not only her friends, she wanted her family there, too. So she had all the old people in there, like myself, dancing. I didn't do my party split this time.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I was nervous.
As someone who doesn't want you to miss shows.
But it was just a really special time, and we sang happy birthday, even though we had an ice cream truck. We had a small cake, and she said, you know, she said, it feels weird to be 18, is what she said.
Yeah, because you're an adult, but you're not really.
Yeah, you're not really adult. And but then she's off to college, so it's pretty cool.
It's exciting.
It was wonderful.
A last hurrah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was wonderful.
All right, so in the spirit of looking back and thinking about yourself at that age, what would you say to your 18-year-old self?
Oh, you know, I learned something recently from Dr. Tom Mayer, who is the medical director of the NFL.
You just interviewed him for our social channels.
I did, yeah. He's really quite impressive. He did sort of like the 9/11 response. He's deployed, you know, doctors to Ukraine. He did, you know, he invented the concussion protocol for the NFL. He's a really special guy. And his belief is that you must find deep joy in whatever you do. And hopefully that deep joy will meet the deepest needs of the country. And when that happens, you're walking in your purpose. And I always knew that I wanted to write books and I wanted to be a broadcast journalist. And there was no one else that looked like me out there. And my parents were like, be a doctor or, you know, a vet or, you know, a lawyer, just something steady. But that thing inside of me was always there. And so I would tell my 18-year-old self, follow your deep joy and it will meet the world's deep needs. And that is true purpose. That's what I would tell. And I just told my daughter that.
That's great.
Yeah, I did.
That's great. Did she take it in?
She really did. She's an artist. She's a painter.
Right.
And a dancer. And it brings her deep joy. And so I'm happy for her.
I think that's the challenge for people, to find the thing that brings them deep joy, because I don't know that everyone has it at the top of their fingers.
Yes, it brings her deep joy, and she's going to be studying studio art
that's
in college.
That's unbelievable. You should be very proud.
I am.
all right. And I am very proud of this podcast, as always. Thank you for joining me today, Sunny.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, I will be back with joy. As always, deep joy will be here. As always, we want to hear from you, so check the episode description for the number to our Behind the Table hotline, and give us a call or a text. Thanks so much for listening.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.